Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the NY Deterrent Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Lautha, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrent Studies. The NY Deterrent Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome back to another great episode of NucleCast. Of course, I'm your host, Adam Lautha, and today we have, I don't know, you guys probably know what I'm about to say, we have a great guest. Of course, I'm talking about Rich Tai, who is the President and Chief Executive Officer of Consolidated Nuclear Security, which is the Bechtel Management and Operating Contractor for Y-12. And of course, most of you know what Y-12 is. At least you know the history of it. Whether you know what it's doing today or not, maybe we'll talk about that. So with that in mind, Rich, welcome to NucleCast.
Yeah, thanks. Good to be here, Adam.
So Y-12 is not the Y-12 of the Manhattan Project, and CNS is, you know, not the Manhattan Project. Can you sort of tell us, who is CNS and what do they do? And then what's going on at Y-12 today?
Yeah, absolutely. As you allude to, I think a lot of people are familiar with Y-12, Y-12 National Security Complex from the Manhattan Project in the last few years of World War II. And so historically, and by reputation, I think, Y-12 is often known for highly enriched uranium because, in fact, as part of the Manhattan Project, Y-12 is where the highly enriched uranium for the first nuclear warhead was produced. And so that was the beginning. After World War II, that mission at Y-12 ended, and that was in part due to the technology that was used. The highly enriched uranium originally was produced using calutrons, which worked, but were not very efficient. So after World War II, as we moved into the Cold War, gaseous diffusion was the technology that was developed, and that was on a different site on the Oak Ridge Reservation, K-25. So the mission of Y-12, as you pointed out, evolved. And so today, when we look at Y-12's role as far as the nuclear deterrent, we have really two primary things that we're responsible for. The first is we manufacture canned subassemblies. You might also hear the term secondaries, or really the thermonuclear part of a modern nuclear warhead. And then secondly, we're responsible for the radiation case that goes around the primary and the secondary parts of the warhead. So those are the two major components that we produce here at Y-12 today. Now with that comes a number of complexities, including material streams. So in order to do that, we process four primary material streams today at Y-12. We still process highly enriched uranium. We also process high purity depleted uranium and some special alloys of depleted uranium. And we process enriched lithium. And then the fourth material stream is something we refer to as special materials. And it's because of the classification nature of what that is, we just simply refer to them as special materials. So that's sort of a quick summary of what Y-12 is today. Now, you mentioned consolidated nuclear security. I think many of, I know yourself and many of the folks who listen to this podcast are familiar with management and operating contractors within the DOE complex. Well, Consolidated Nuclear Security is the management and operating contractor for Y-12. We have been in that role since 2014.
So, I don't think I actually knew all of the breadth of the things that you guys were doing at Y-12. I sort of had a vaguer idea, but, you know, I'm still like, wow, I didn't realize they did all that. So what can you tell us about where your mission is and how are you having some of the same challenges with talent acquisition and retention? Are you guys on track with your programs? Tell me more about how you guys are doing and, you know, how that's progressing?
Sure. Yeah. So at Y-12, there's essentially three primary missions, and somewhat unique to the NNSA, I believe we're the only site from the eight sites that comprise the nuclear security enterprise that is involved in all three of NNSA's missions. So first and foremost, we support the nuclear deterrent. Secondly, we support global nuclear security. And then finally, Y-12 provides the highly enriched uranium feedstock for our naval nuclear propulsion for our Navy, for submarines and aircraft carriers. So three primary missions. To do this, we currently have a workforce of approximately 12,500 employees that work at the Y-12 site. So as part of that work, we're also responsible for the design, construction, startup, and commissioning of the uranium processing facility. So if you take a look at that mission work and the and this initiative to recapitalize infrastructure, we sort of look at three focus areas. First, we want to meet our mission deliverables across those three mission areas. Secondly, the NNSA across the complex is recapitalizing its infrastructure, so we're doing a tremendous amount of work simultaneously in recapitalizing infrastructure. And then third, and very importantly, we are developing technology so that we can modernize our production techniques. We are currently utilizing many processes that were developed during the Cold War. They're proven, they work, but we're also looking at new technologies that will allow us to be more efficient and, quite honestly, more responsive and agile as demands and requirements come to us. So you also alluded to how are we doing? How are we doing to meet that mission? Well, I'm really, really proud to share the work that was done here by all those folks that work at Y-12, that fiscal year to date, so fiscal year 2025, for our nuclear deterrent work, through the end of July, we're actually at 127% of our baseline. So we are ahead of schedule in delivering on that work. We're also well ahead on our deliverables for global nuclear security and for naval reactors. In fiscal year 2024, we also exceeded the baseline across all three mission areas. So kind of back to your question, how are we doing? Yeah, there's challenges. We have many of the challenges you alluded to, recruiting and retaining talent, getting our people the experience they need. We have some aging infrastructure, like many defense sites across the country. But to the credit of our workforce, they've really come through for our national security mission and delivered. And so really nice to be able to share that with you and the audience that you have.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I'm a little blown away because I've never heard anybody say, as we've talked to all the lab directors and everybody, we're 127% ahead of that's like, you know, I've never heard anybody say 100%, much less 127.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, here's what I want you to do, Rich. I want you to take your left hand, put it over your right shoulder, and then pat yourself on the back. So good job, Rich. Good job.
You know what? I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to take that and pass it along to the workforce, because while I may be, you know, I have a title, I can tell you that I have not turned a wrench or produced any of those deliverables. It's the workforce here and the leaders that we have on the site. They're just a great group of people we have here in East Tennessee.
You know, the funny thing is, as an Alabama graduate, it pains me to know that so many Tennessee fans are doing so well. But I'll be happy for the nation. I'll let that slide. So
yeah, if you come visit us, you're always welcome. You might see some orange around the site if you come, especially in the fall.
Oh, I know. It's painful. So how about let's talk safety? I mean, because you handle a lot of sensitive material, and I mean, more than I expected. And so talk to me about safety and sort of where you are and, you know, how you've made dramatic improvements over time. And, you know, you had to tear down, what was at one point, wasn't it the largest building in the country? And didn't it consume like the most electricity it was like half the nation's electricity, I think is what I read at one point. So, I mean, but you've done all that. So where are we now and how's that effort going?
No, I appreciate the question. I'll just tell you that we come at safety from a number of perspectives. First and foremost, and it's really a core value that we have, is our workforce. So the way we describe it is we want to send every one of our workers home each day when they finish their shift in the same condition that they came to work in. We want to send them home to their family, their loved ones, their friends with no change. And the thing that we absolutely seek to avoid is any kind of life-altering injury. So that's first and foremost. Secondly, we have a responsibility to the community in which we live and in which the plant exists, such that there is no risk that we can impact anything off-site. So we take that, of course, very seriously to ensure that we don't have any releases or any impact outside the boundaries of the Y-12 site. And then, of course, finally, it is important that we work with a high level of rigor and disciplined operations such that twofold. One, we don't impact any of the capabilities, any of the facilities and manufacturing equipment so that we have a long delay. And secondly, so that what we produce is produced at a high quality. So, you know, you start with safety, but as we start to pull the thread on that, it quickly runs from industrial safety and the safety of the workforce to protecting and ensuring that we don't have an impact on the surrounding community, to facilities and critical infrastructure. But then as we get into this and start thinking about rigor and disciplined operations, it then very quickly moves to quality and the predictability and the level of products that we produce, which is ultimately what we're here for. So something we talk about and think about every day, and rather than have it be a separate discussion, it evolves into being simply how we do work, whether it's disciplined operations or how we're going to work safely. But to your point, we do work with hazardous materials. We do have high hazard operations, and our objective is to ensure that we mitigate any potential impact to our workers or to the environment.
So as you kind of look forward in the years ahead, sort of what is your expectation for, let's say, are you expecting more growth? Because I'll be honest, I did not think you were as big as you are, that your workforce size is considerably bigger than I expected it to be. So do you think are you looking for more growth? Are you sort of arcing, or do you have expanding? In talking to Eric Wallerman at KCNSC, I mean, they're just as busy as they can possibly be. And are you sort of experiencing, is this kind of across the manufacturing part of the nuclear enterprise that you guys are just, you can barely keep up? Or, you know, where are you guys and what do you expect to be?
Right. So to your question, we're currently working on seven different weapons programs, and we finished one up earlier this fiscal year. So during fiscal year 25, we will have worked on 8 separate weapons programs here at Y-12. So that's one measure of the workload. What I would say going forward is we do anticipate an increasing workload. Some of the details are yet to be defined. But I think what we're also likely to see is not only an increase in workload, but an expectation that we're more agile and responsive and we can do different things and multiple things quicker and simultaneously. So, yes, I think we'll see a growth in the workload, but I think we'll also see somewhat of a demand in diversification of what we do and agility and how quickly we can do it. And back to your earlier question, the thing that I failed to mention is even as we see this increase in workload over the last several years, I am very proud to share the results that our workforce achieved. In 2024, we had the safest year that's been documented at Y-12 for industrial safety, and we're actually doing better in 2025. So even as we're restarting capabilities, we're increasing our workforce, there's greater demands on what we can produce. It takes every day, so I can only speak to how we're doing through today. We have to refocus every day, but we are seeing improvement in actually setting new standards for safety even as we execute that work. If I could just add to that, what I think we're also going to continue to see growth in is this reinvestment and modernization of infrastructure. So even as we see that production workload continuing to grow and probably continuing to increase in complexity, we anticipate also seeing continued investment such that we can modernize facilities. And as I alluded to earlier, not just modernize facilities, but modernize our production methodologies. So yeah, I would say that we as we look into the future, we see continued growth.
This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the Ann Law Deterrence Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence. So you mentioned, you know, facility modernization, and you know, we talked with Jim Dawkins not long ago, and you know what they're doing at Savannah River, and sort of just the challenge that can be to build that kind of a facility. Are you experiencing, because I mean you deal with equally, you know, critical materials, are you also seeing sort of challenges with just being able to, you know, find, you know, cleared concrete guys and, you know, plumbers and electricians and, you know, to meet those, you know, standards for those types of facilities and just finding all of that, putting it together to then build the, you know, out those facilities. Is that a challenge for you or are you seeing sort of less of it than, you know, perhaps others are?
Yeah, no, it's certainly a challenge. So let me talk about a couple of examples. The uranium processing facility is our largest capital project. We peaked, our construction workforce actually peaked about 2 years ago. And so we worked with the NNSA because we simply could not get enough craft workforce here locally. So we put in place some incentives for people to come from out of state and from further than you can commute from. And that allowed us to get the workforce that we needed during the, you know, the peak year to 2 years when we needed the larger workforce to stay on schedule. So that's one element of it is working collaboratively with NNSA to address those issues. And with our parent company, Bechtel, we're able to look at labor surveys and understand where the craft workforce is across the country and what it's going to take as we forecast into the future. So that's one thing we can do for a large project like UPF. Another element of UPF, and we do this on a number of our projects, to the extent that we can, we try to isolate the construction site such that we don't require the workforce to have security clearances. So we'll do a background check, but it makes it much easier and we're much, much more nimble in our recruitment and getting people on the job if we're not waiting for a background check to get a security clearance. So for the large projects, that's certainly an approach. Another challenge that we see, and I think it's seen across the country, is supply chain. So in particular, nuclear quality grade supply chain, whether it's furnaces or whether it's glove boxes, that is something that I think many of the sites across the nuclear security enterprise are seeing, you know, they're seeing that same challenge. And so we have some good lessons from that and how to work with the supply chain to give them early notice, how we can make the, you know, get the most out of that supply chain by where we place the most complex orders and where we can go to potentially new suppliers with less complex equipment that they're going to be able to be successful in providing. So another element of how we can deliver on this infrastructure. When we get into the operating facilities, we do have to be creative. And so one thing we do is we do have a cleared workforce, a construction workforce that's cleared. And so we can use those individuals sort of strategically, but we also have the opportunity to escort uncleared workers. And that comes with a set of challenges. And of course, we need to meet security requirements, but that gives us yet more flexibility within the operating plant when we need to, in order so that we can, we can get this work done.
Yeah, that is always, a challenge. So we talked about the future a few minutes ago, but as you look at sort of the demands of the future, do you see, a future in which 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, we're going to, instead of, perhaps modding warheads, we're going to, we may have reached this period where we have to we have new warheads and completely new and, we're going to be making pits for all of them and secondaries and, just this entire process that we've already been through, in the 60s and 70s and 80s, and we've sort of delayed for 30 years. And now that bill will come due in the years ahead. Are you guys kind of planning for that, or what are you guys thinking?
No, it's a great question and is spot on. So to your point, what we have seen generally in the past has been more life extension programs, right? So not brand new designs, not brand new warheads, but refurbishing is maybe a good term. We're actually, we are planning for that. And in fact, in many respects, the W-93 is that warhead, where it's the first new warhead authorized by Congress since the end of the Cold War. And that is going to require us to, in effect, have all of our capabilities at Y-12, for example, because there'll be no reuse of components. So we'll need to be able to fabricate and produce all the components for the 93. And that is the warhead that'll go on the Columbia-class submarine. So that's coming in exactly the time frame that you alluded to. And so that is exactly what we are looking to in the future. And one reason that we're focused on modernizing and looking at new technology around our manufacturing processes such that we can be more efficient in the future. And it's a tough balance. We work closely with the design agencies because certainly the existing manufacturing processes that we use are proven, and they are certified by the design agencies, and all the properties are well known. So, there's underground nuclear testing data associated with those manufacturing processes. As we move to new processes, it's something we have to work very closely, as I said, with the design agencies to make sure that those processes and the components that we make utilizing those processes can be certified by the design agency. So Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory and Los Alamos National Laboratory.
Yeah. And I would assume that, the relationship, because, there's always been sort of there are the design labs, LANL, Livermore, and Sandia, and then there are the production folks. And, we're all part of the same nuclear enterprise, but we're not exactly the same. And so has that relationship, is it tighter than it was historically? Because I would assume, you've got liaison officers, back and forth, and you've got engineers from, if you're working a Livermore product, that you've got engineers from Livermore there. Is that kind of a really tight relationship these days?
Yeah. So certainly from my perspective, it's a really effective and collaborative relationship, and we have very good communication, and folks work together quite well. Now, I'm not a career person here at Y-12, so I also like to hear from some of our folks that have been here longer term, and they reinforce that. They say that they've never seen the collaboration stronger, and I think it's because there's very good people, and there's good alignment on what the objectives are. But beyond that, it's necessary. So if we're going to be successful as an enterprise, we absolutely have to have that type of relationship and collaboration across the enterprise, or we simply, as an enterprise, are not going to be able to do what is being asked of the enterprise.
Now, fortunately, it is that time in the podcast where we like to bring out Bob the Genie. And as I rub my magic lamp, Bob grants all guests three wishes. But, no youth. I mean, I could really use a new set of knees. My knees are terrible from being a runner. But I can't, Bob won't grant me that. And so, Rich, you get your three wishes. So let me ask you, what is your first wish?
All right. Well, I'm assuming that while Bob is quite powerful, he's not capable of solving all the world's problems. So my first wish would be that the Y-12 National Security Complex continues to meet or exceed the mission deliverables that are asked of the site and of the people, and that we are effective at modernizing the infrastructure while we do that and getting new technologies in place, just so that long-term Y-12 in the coming decades can continue to support the nation's defense as it has in the past. So that would be number one.
Okay, so now you sort of raised an interesting point in your wish. And now I would assume that you guys have thought through what could derail us. What could be those one or two or three variables that if we prevent them from happening, have you guys given thought to that? Is that?
Yeah, we do. We do an enterprise risk assessment. We look across the site and the enterprise to identify and then prioritize what those risks are. And I don't think this will surprise you, but some of the higher risks are some single point failures in some of our capabilities and our infrastructure, coupled with that infrastructure in many cases is aging, decades old. So it's in effect a challenge to identify, what is most critical. And as we get those investment dollars to go tackle those projects and eliminate the risk as we do that. So that's probably the number one thing that we are concerned about is single point failures and aging infrastructure.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so that's wish number one. Okay, wish number two.
So, I may or may not have been tipped off that Bob the Genie might show up. So I thought about this a little bit. And you know what? This is a little more personal, but as I look at just the incredible talent that we have here in some of our early and mid-career leaders, my second wish would be to be able to see into the future and see what they do, because I think they're going to do great things, and it would be wonderful if I could look into the future and see what all those things are based on what I see from them now, which is tremendous. They're doing a tremendous job, but they also have tremendous potential in what they may do in the future.
Yeah. And I have you noticed that, younger folks tend to be different than, the generations that preceded them. And are you guys able to sort of, like one of the big complaints is, young people, I've got teenagers and I'm pretty sure that cell phones must be more, addictive than like heroin or something. They can't live without them attached to their hands. And so, some of those challenges where people are used to being able to be on their phones and all the things that, if for those of us that have sat in skiffs a lot of our career, you just can't do that. Are you guys adapting to all of that sort of changing generational expectations?
I think we are. I wish we could do it faster, because the one thing we want to be able to do is, especially for our early career folks, we want them, when they come to work at Y-12, we want them to, be in an environment where they're working with the latest technology, not feeling like they're taking a step back. So, it's something we're very focused on, in part because it helps with recruitment and retention, but as are more important, it's part of us operating more efficiently and with greater certainty. So we're looking at, electronic procedures, and anything we can digitize is going to be good along those lines. What I will tell you is, and I think this is maybe not unique to East Tennessee, but it is certainly a feature of East Tennessee, we have tremendous community support at every level. you know, our elected officials, the communities, the educational institutions. And so the workforce, of the majority of the workforce that we draw, you know, that we hire is from East Tennessee. And folks are just, you know, all in. They're believers in the mission. They're believers in what happens at Y-12. So that also is a great motivator across all of our generations that we have working at Y-12, is believing in what we're doing. And yeah, there is an adjustment. You know, we have summer interns here that are undergraduate college students, and they can't have their phone with them sometimes, right? Depending on where they're working. That's a
all
big
day.
Adjustment.
Yeah.
Yeah. In some cases,
sure.
All day, right? Yeah.
Okay. So your final wish, final wish.
Right. So as I said, we may or may not have had some discussion ahead of this about some ground rules. And one of the ground rules that I was given on Bob the Genie was it needed to involve something we talked about. So I was struggling with my third wish, but you've opened that up to me because you mentioned Alabama. So my third wish is that the University of Notre Dame wins the college football national championship this season. The first time since 1988, if that in fact happens.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll get off topic a little bit here, but there was that game where Alabama played Notre Dame a few years back, and I don't think Notre Dame ever got past the 50-yard line on offense. And I'll be honest with you, that was beautiful to my heart to see that happen, because Notre Dame has beat Alabama in national title games, you know, in decades past. And so that was one where I was just very pleased to see it.
So. Thank you so much for bringing that up. I had tried to forget it. But to your point, one of my early memories is the Sugar Bowl. I believe it was 1973 for the national championship. And Tom Clemens, the Notre Dame quarterback, throwing a pass out of Notre Dame's own end zone on third down to preserve the win. So, yeah, it's a little too far back in history for my preference. We need some modern-day national champions.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's been a great discussion. Thanks. Thanks, Rich, for coming on. It's, you know, it's the first time we've ever talked about Y-12, really. So, you know, it's been a long time coming. So now we've done it. And I think I'm pretty sure a lot of our listeners will be surprised at how much is actually going on at Y-12. So thanks for being here to let us know.
No, I appreciate the opportunity. Enjoyed the discussion, other than the national title game from about 10 or 12 years ago. But no, really enjoyed it. And, you know, really what I've enjoyed is the opportunity to share with you what the people at Y-12 are doing, you know, that workforce and how they're delivering for the nation. It's something that I'm very proud to be part of, and they do a great job.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, Rich, thanks for joining us. And of course, thanks to you, the listeners, and we'll see you on the next episode.
This has been a production of the Anwa Deterrent Center, a 501c3 that seeks to educate key decision makers, stakeholders, and the public to ensure a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent. Our executive producer is Kimberly Channington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Grunfeld. Help us grow our followers by sharing it and follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NucleCast.